And we're joined this half hour by Pam Hett and Bill McCamley. Again, the We is Speak Up Las Cruces with Daisy and Peter co-hosting this particular week. And we invite you to join us and call in at 526-5825, particularly if you disagree with our speakers or if you can explain or amplify or have some reaction on the subject. You know, call us and succinctly set us right. Having said that, you guys were both very involved. I gather, Pam, you are one of the leaders of the local Indivisible.
Yes.
And Bill, you've had a number of formal and informal positions in and out of government around here for a very long time. And if you were trying to describe what happened last Saturday, and, you know, just happen to run into somebody on the train or whatever it might be.
Because we have a train around here, Peter.
Well, I grew up.
It would be nice.
I grew up in
right,
New York.
No, that's why I'm saying it, too, because that would be really nice, actually.
Or, well, on your boat, then.
On your jet ski.
No, but if you were trying to tell somebody, and I'll ask each of you, Pam, first, what happened last Saturday?
It was an enormous success. We had about 3,000 people come to Albert Johnson Park to basically say no to No Kings. Okay, we live in a democracy. We want our freedom of speech, of expression, of healthcare, everything that you could think of. And it was a very diverse crowd. Young people, all different generational backgrounds, coming together as community. And I think that's one of the things that we are really trying to foster is community. It doesn't matter necessarily what side of the aisle you are, because there have been things that this administration has done that affects everybody almost from birth to death. Different policies and things that have come through. And we're just saying, no, this chaos and confusion is just not what we're going to put up with anymore.
They're even undermining our defense, even though they are renaming it as our War Department. They're undermining our defense in various ways, which has been a traditional concern more of people on the right than people on the left.
Mm-hmm. And a celebration. I think that was what we wanted. Very joyful. It was 100% peaceful. Yep. There were some counter people that were across the street, and we just waved, and hi, how you doing? You
know. Well, there was one guy who drove past and was trying to get violent, and somebody, I think an undercover LCPD officer, but wearing a black sports jacket.
That was me.
Huh? Was it you that did that?
I had to de-escalate that, yeah.
Okay. Well, good for you.
I saw
it from across the street. I wondered who it was.
I
remember seeing the guy was bald. I should have realized.
No, it was very important, as Pam pointed out, that was peaceful. You had all these national Republicans who support the current regime saying that people out there hate America, that we were violent leftists, that we just wanted to tear down everything. And I think one of the successes, and Pam deserves a lot of credit for this, and organizing so many people where the attitude was joyful. And frankly, countering all of that stupidity with absurdity, you saw so many of the inflatable animals. I saw Elvis guy on stilts who said, "No kings but this one, baby." You know, it was just so good.
The guy on stilts is a neighbor of
ours.
He had like a Uncle Sam thing last time.
It was great. It was so great. But I think, Peter, just to expand on the point Pam was talking about, it is so important for us to realize that the current guy in charge does not want to be president. He wants to be a dictator. And I will give you four concrete examples of that. Number one, he talks about people like Vladimir Putin and Viktor Orban and Erdogan in Turkey, guys that have become, for lack of a better word, dictators. They have gotten away from democracy. They have used their forces to keep themselves in power. And Trump likes them. He calls them his friends. People he wants to be
the
like.
The guy in Brazil, too.
Bolsonaro, right. Number two, dictators, when they become dictators, a lot of times after winning elections, are able to consolidate their power by creating a constant state of emergency. And you saw this with Mussolini. You saw it with Hitler. You saw it with Perón and Pinochet down in South America. And Trump is doing that all the time. You see all these emergency declarations will let you get away from the checks and balances, right? That's important. The third thing – oh, go ahead.
Let me throw in one point about that. Who was loudest in complaining about the fact that President Obama had a right. couple of Donald Trump.
That's right.
You know, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, but hypocrisy doesn't seem to work with those guys. Mm-hmm. And so I find that frustrating as well, but that doesn't seem to work. I think what does work, though, is pointing out the issues. You're seeing the third one. You're actually seeing it with some of the, you know, what have been more libertarian podcast bros. They're even being uncomfortable with the third point I want to make, which is when you start combining the military with police in a country, you saw this with the black shirts in Italy with Mussolini. You saw it with the brown shirts morphing into the Waffen-SS in Germany. The KGB was this kind of joint military police organization. And when Trump says we need to have a specific National Guard unit that exists solely to patrol American streets, when ICE is now running around in armored cars and full military getup. Just yesterday, I saw an article saying ICE is buying guided missile warheads. This is a that's on. It just came out yesterday. That's really scary because when you have a person who wants to be a dictator then have their own military force who can unleash that on people when they don't agree with him, that's dictator stuff. Mm-hmm. That's king stuff, right? That's what we're protesting. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing is something that's super important, which is in America, we didn't want a king. We fought a war against that. And we set up all of these processes that would hopefully keep that from happening here. So you have these what we call checks and balances. The Congress is supposed to put the money in play. That's their big power. And the president is supposed to use that money in the way Congress tells them to do so. Well, Trump doesn't want to do that. And as part of Project 2025, which we've talked on here before, he wants to take all of that money without congressional approval and use it however he wants. I mean, these are all very specific things that go down the road to a dictator. And I'll say one last thing and then I'll shut up. I heard yesterday a great comment. All these guys are like, well, if he was a king, then you wouldn't be able to protest. And the thing was like, well, do you want us to wait until we're not allowed to anymore?
Right.
Right. Because that's the road we're going down and we don't want it to get there.
Yeah. And he has gotten rid of all the inspectors general.
That's right.
Which one, you know, Congress put them in place to watch over departments. The attorney general is supposed to be sort of this weird common hybrid where he or she is an advisor to the president and obviously somewhat allied, but also somewhat independent with a loyalty to the Constitution. That ain't going on.
Well, and Peter and Daisy, I think Pam really pointed this out, and I'd just like to add on to that. It's so important that we don't just argue these issues from this high academic ledge. We should tell you why it's bad for you. Yep. And so there are a ton of examples. I mean, the tariff situation that he has just willy-nilly thrown in. Look, tariffs have been used in the past at a targeted level to do some decent things. But this blanket tariff stuff is supposed to be creating jobs. Manufacturing jobs are down and prices are up and are continuing to be up. Coffee is probably the most applicable one for people. A lot of people drink coffee. I don't, but a lot of people do. Well, when you put a tariff on Brazil, we don't grow coffee here. Very little bit in Puerto Rico, very little bit in Hawaii. That drives the prices up. That makes life harder on people. Video games, automobiles, all those things are up for nothing. And that's a real problem.
Well, there's 2 points about it. I think everybody is certainly capable of understanding if they think about it for a moment. One is that nowadays, you know, an automobile has so many component parts, you know, computers and this and that, that are made in Mexico and then sent over here where we put them together and then maybe send them back to Mexico or wherever, or Japan to put in a car, whatever it may be. They're all, and if you're taxing or tariff, you know, adding tariffs at every level, they magnify. But the other thing is just the basic uncertainty.
That's right.
If you were thinking about starting a factory tomorrow to make widgets, and you're realizing everything's crazy. Nobody knows what's going on, how much anything's going to cost tomorrow, whether we're even dealing with that country, and whether I can get any workers. I'll put my money in the stock market for a little while.
Yeah, but that's
been
something
else. Even been booming back and forth. And people's 401ks have, all of a sudden tanked, and then they go back up again.
That's right.
And if they're trying to plan for their future, and I think what the No Kings and Indivisible as an organization has really tried to do is reach out to everybody.
Yes.
Because there is not a person, no matter how you voted, that isn't going to be affected by whether it's his edicts on health care, edicts on education, all the tariff stuff, what's happened with agriculture. And we just want to say, if you are frustrated and aggravated, what does we the people mean? We the people mean we take back our power, our interest, and say, no, this is what we want to do. And then take it and be actionable. Because people have said, okay, what are we going to do after No Kings? What's the next steps? Well, yeah, there will be a No Kings 3, that's for sure, but we don't know exactly when.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of, let's start the economic portion of these boycotts. Let's do the non-compliance, the non-acceptance of some of this stuff. And that makes it way more palatable to individuals, no matter how they voted. Because, again, no, depending on how you voted, it doesn't matter, because you are going to be impacted. Mm-hmm. When you go to a rural hospital, they don't ask you, oh, could I see your voter's card, please? You're just not going to get it.
That's why I was so appalled by the Katie Porter, the candidate for governor in California. I don't know if you saw it, but they asked her basically, 40% of the people in the state voted for Donald Trump, and you're going to need them. What do you say to them? And she basically said, well, I don't need them.
No, that's wrong.
That's the wrong.
There
that's
is
wrong.
A lot you can say, and you don't start with what you think about Donald Trump. You think about, hey, he promised this, he's doing that.
Well, and I would say to people on the far left, respectfully but passionately, when we set up artificial red lines of when you are good enough for us, that has hurt us in elections.
Yes.
And I did see some actual pushback on social media on the left of the No King saying, well, you guys just show up once a month and have a good time, and you're not good enough to be part of our movement. I'm like, you build social movements by, A, going to people where they're at, meeting them where they're at. That's important we do that. And, B, bringing them into your movement. And everybody's got a role to play. You know, I found a story the other day that gave me real hope. There was a lady who was a railroad switch operator in Austria during World War II.
Oh, wow.
And she worked with the resistance. And her whole job was to notice when refugees would go on a train, or people they were taking away would go on a train, and to hold them up for 15 minutes until the resistance could get set up. And her, just by doing those sorts of things, was able to save like hundreds and thousands of people's lives. Like, we all have a role to play, and it's okay, whatever you're willing to do.
We have a caller. Good morning. Hello?
Good morning. Good morning.
And how are you this morning, or what do you want to say about what we're talking about?
This is Gregory Shuvanik, and I would like to ask your guests. They pointed out four significant root items that go right to the definition of treason. So, why are we not talking about treason here, which is part of our democracy and republic, rather than talking about tyranny under being a king? The world needs to speak out that this is treason under the definition of 50 dictionaries in a takeover, especially with the lawsuit of last night for $232 million of private invasion that Trump wants the American people to pay him for.
Gotcha. Let me throw in an explanation for people who may not have caught that, and then have our guests answer your question about isn't this treason and why aren't we saying that. But the $230 million he's referring to is Donald Trump, of course, was investigated for various things that, you know, he might well have been indicted for, might or might not have been convicted for. And he wants to, he's trying to get the government to repay his legal fees.
Right.
But, mm-hmm. yeah, what? Why are we not pointing out loudly that he's treasonous?
I'll start if you want. Look, we have a system in place in the United States to replace people that we don't like, and that system is called elections. And I would say that that has been the most effective mechanism by which we've had to change when we've made a mistake. I would say that in 2-3 weeks, we're going to have an election here for school board and city council. And a lot of the issues that are being brought up on a national level are being reflected at the city. You know, our city just made a great decision to reinforce our welcoming city resolution, which said, hey, ICE, if you want to come in, you have to have a warrant to get in, search our records if you want to go after people. The school board has kind of rejected this Project 2025 Trump-led effort to ban books. And I would say that when we voted for really good state representatives and governors, one of the things Trump was able to do in his, unfortunately, in this last summer was cut a bunch of funds for healthcare, education, public radio. But our state got together and said, we're not going to let that bleep happen here. And they went and backfilled hospitals. They went and backfilled education. They backfilled NPR so that rural places have this really critical thing. And so it's so important that we vote for people that oppose this stuff, because we still do have elections. And while that is in place, again, before we get to the kings, mm-hmm. we need to exercise our power in that
all,
way.
All true doesn't address the question, the caller's question.
About treason.
Well, yeah, treason, we are starting to verbalize that and understand exactly what that means, because that is somewhat of an old concept that really, you know, presently you're not really thinking about that. But I think it's also with our legislature and Congress, how they are just frozen in time yeah. and not doing anything. And this shutdown is a perfect example. And so I think that's where the people have got to start to rise up through the election process and just calling your congressman and writing and standing in front of them saying, get your butts in gear. We need to get this fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if I can go back to your initial point, Bill, about the, you know, what we're seeing on the horizon in terms of President Trump. And before he came into office, he was definitely talking about how he was, you know, going to have a third term, right? And it's going to happen, and because of this and that. And right now, I think that conversation has, I don't know if stalled is the right word, but nobody's having that conversation anymore, right? And I think right now, right, I feel like he's doing all his chaos stuff. But I guess from, I'm wondering from y'all's perspective, like, what can we expect then, like in 2 years, when, you know, presidential candidates are going to start, or folks are going to be like, oh, I want to run for president. What's on the horizon? And then what, as us, I guess, American voters should be doing?
Well, number one, I don't like to have the term what we should expect. I think we need to challenge ourselves. What can we do to change the situation moving forward? And I would say that little things like going out to a protest, like protests matter for a couple reasons. Number one, if you're feeling alone, which I have been, and as more and more people get on social media and kind of live online, we're losing that ability to have physical connection with other people. Man, I was awesome on Saturday. It was fun. People were laughing, having a good time. There was good music. Almost everybody honked in support. Mm-hmm. And we were able to say thank you to everybody being there. And knowing that there is a community around you that is supporting what you're feeling, that's important. Do that. That's a big deal. Secondly, go out and vote for these people in these local elections and then next year in the congressional and the state elections that back your values and that back what America is, which is we don't have one guy making all the decisions. That's not we fought a war in the 1700s to get away from that. Let's go back and back people who truly believe in what this country is, which is a government for the people, by the people, of the people, that we all back, right? So that's really important. But also, make your voice heard. Stories win. And if you have a story, do you know someone who was a really good, productive member of this society that was seized by ICE for no other reason than the president just wants to round up all the brown people and kick them out? Tell that story. Did you have a problem with your Medicaid or Medicare that was cut in this ugly-ass bill that was passed last year? Tell your story. Those things matter. And when we are active, when we seize power, that's how democracy works, and that's how people win. So I would say, rather than what do we expect, I would say this. The thing I'm worried about most in next year's elections is the president sending ICE to polling places to try to intimidate people into not voting. If that happens, we need to show up and be like, nah, dude, that's not how we do business here. But if those things happen, show up and make your voice heard in a nonviolent, peaceful, positive way.
Pam?
Oh, yeah. I would just add to that is we need to listen, okay? Mm-hmm. I think we have come up with preconceived of ideas of what this group should need and what they need to do. Maybe we should just sit back and listen and understand, because there was a third of the population that just didn't vote. They have lost faith.
Yeah.
And how do we work with them? And again, we're not going to be agreeable on every single issue, but things have gotten so chaotic, so horrible, that there has to be some common ground we see. And then the other thing is start building our bench strength. I think that has been a huge thing that we need to understand. Let's bring on the next generation or even the generation after that, because there's two generations under me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I need to step us. I don't need to step aside, because I still need, and I'm talking about people in their 60s, 70s. We still need to be involved, but let's mentor and work with the next generation and say, we need you, and here's what you can do to make this better.
That's good.
Yeah.
Let me.
Okay. No, you go ahead. Go ahead, Peter.
A really hard question, because I agree with you that, you know, this was a great event. It was joyful. Things do build in that way. I saw lots of people who had previously not liked what's going on, but they hadn't gone to anything, and they were there joyfully and all of that. And I think that does build in the way you're at the same time, we're looking at something we maybe have never seen in this country, which is everything stacked in the sense that they're redistricting so that Congress won't be even as democratically elected as it is now, which is borderline. They're now all the media are being bought up. So people may not have access to the facts soon, and even if they vote, a lot of people vote differently, it may not change anything. So the hard question is, democracy is under, our democracy to the extent we have one, is under duress. What's your best guess about what's going to happen? Will it survive wholly or partially or not? And what will be the deciding factor?
Yes, democracy will survive. And I think we're going to come out stronger, because people are resilient, and fundamentally we still have the right, we still have the right to free speech, to free expression, to being able to come together, the right to vote. Now, yes, there is horrible attacks on all of those, but by having, you know, community and banding together and saying, looking across the aisle to people with different views, do you still stand for the first couple sentences of the Constitution? We, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, are getting together. And so if you take it from that very basics, I think we have something to build upon to continue with a democracy and make it better.
I'll only say one thing, 3.5%.
Yeah.
there is a researcher at Harvard who went and spent 20 years studying dictatorships across the world. And what she found was, A, nonviolence works better than violence.
Mm-hmm.
So movements that have been peaceful yet strong have actually been more effective than people that have tried to use guns and bombs mm-hmm. and all that. And the other thing she found was that no dictator, none, survives it when 3.5% of the people can be activated. Things like protests. We had 7 million people come out across mm-hmm. the country. That's 2%, right? Are there another 1.5% that could come out and do things like boycotts, do things like vote, demonstrations? If we can get that number of people that understand how important this is, that's where democracy will be almost guaranteed to survive, because that's the number that it's been in the past in every other place that we found.
We have only 3 minutes left. Did you want to ask a question, Daisy? Or?
Well, no, I mean, you kind of answered the question, because when I had asked about, I guess my concern is not necessarily in 2 years or in during the midterms, is that Trump is going to make a case, right? Like, it's going to come back, like, I can get voted in again, or somehow he can stay in office. And so what can we do? So I think that actually answered, thank you, Bill, answered that sort of question too. It's like, well, that won't be possible if we had, right, that 3.5%.
That's right.
So, so maybe, thank you.
Maybe best use of the last minute or so would be for you, Pam, mm-hmm. to tell folks
yeah.
how
yeah.
they can get learn more about Indivisible, get involved.
IndivisibleLCNM.org is our website. We've just redid the whole thing, so there's a ton of information on the website. So we invite you to do that. Our next membership meeting is this Sunday at First Christian Church from 2 to 3:30. We've been having speakers, educational events, posters and postcards. We're trying to reach out to the community to have different points of view to come. And we're just trying to build that awareness, build that community.
Yeah, and then I know you said earlier too, like, people are asking about No Kings 3, but is there any plans in the near future in terms of events or demonstrations?
Yes, I want to make sure I've got the correct date. Okay, so Saturday, November 1st, is one of a huge demonstration that's going to be nationwide, and it's regarding no detention centers, and it correlates with Day of the Dead. And we're doing that also from 10 to 11:30 on Loman and Walnut. So every Saturday we have a demonstration. And the other cool thing about Indivisible and what we're trying to create is that your message is, whether it's healthcare or Social Security or, you know, childcare, it's all embraced by everybody. So it doesn't matter that you have to come out with a specific sign or anything like that. And we've had a great community. I definitely want to thank the Indivisible Steering Committee, because Bill said, you know, Pam, you've done it. No, it's all of us, and it's the group that has made this happen.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being with us, Bill McCamley and Pam Hett.
Thank you.